Good afternoon and evening. It's April 25th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1727 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green with you again today for our study. First, let's continue on from our reading in Zechariah chapter 14, verse 11. And people will certainly inhabit her, and there will occur no more any banning to destruction, and Jerusalem must be inhabited in security. And this is what will, and Jerusalem must be inhabited in security. Right. And there will occur no more any banning to destruction. And this is what will prove to be the scourge with which Jehovah will scourge all the peoples that will actually do military service against Jerusalem. There will be a rotting away of one's flesh while one is standing upon one's feet, and one's very eyes will rot away in their sockets, and one's very tongue will rot away in one's mouth. And it must occur in that day that confusion from Yahweh will become widespread among them, and they will actually grab hold, each one of the hand of his companion, and his hand will actually come up against the hand of his companion. And Judah itself also will be warring at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the nations round about will certainly be gathered, gold and silver and garments in excessive abundance. And this is how the scourge of the horse, the mule, the camel, and the male ass, and every sort of domestic animal that happens to be in those camps will prove to be, like this scourge. Evidently the scourge of the rotting of the eyeballs in the sockets and the tongue rotting away in the mouth. And it must occur that as regards everyone who is left remaining out of all the nations that are coming against Jerusalem, they must also go up from year to year to bow down to the king, Jehovah of armies, and to celebrate the festival of the booths. And it must occur that as regards anyone that does not come up out of the families of the earth to Jerusalem to bow down to the king, Jehovah of armies, even upon them no pouring rain will occur. And if the family of Egypt itself does not come up and does not actually enter, upon them also there shall be none, meaning no rain. The scourge will occur with which Jehovah scourges the nations that do not come up to celebrate the festival of the booths. This itself will prove to be the punishment for the sin of Egypt and the sin of all the nations that do not come up to celebrate the festival of the booths. In that day there will prove to be upon the bells of the horse, quote, holiness belongs to Yahweh, end quote. And the wide-mouthed cooking pots in the house of Yahweh must become like the bowls before the altar. And every wide-mouthed cooking pot in Jerusalem and in Judah must become something holy belonging to Jehovah of armies. And all those who are sacrificing must come in and take from them and must do boiling in them. And there will no more prove to be a Canaanite in the house of Yahweh of armies in that day. That concludes the reading of Zechariah that we missed yesterday, or we failed to complete yesterday, that is. When we come back, we'll look at Nehemiah chapter 1 and Malachi chapter 1, Jehovah willing. I've been thinking about 2 Corinthians 11, of course. Verse 13 says, such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. So it's clear that they're being deceitful. Therefore, nobody who reads this believes that they're transforming themselves into true apostles of Christ. Although we know that when we look at the world, if you've ever noticed anything in the world, you'll notice how the big corporations always jump on any new teaching that they can find, and they try to use it for their own purpose to try to sell more products. And so they transform themselves. We know that this operation that Satan himself transforms himself is quite factual. Satan is transforming himself. not just disguising himself, but transforming himself, even though in the end it's nothing more than a disguise. We know that. We know that. But the point is, nobody understands this in the wrong way. Nobody misunderstands this. When the scriptures say Satan himself keeps transforming himself into an angel of light, nobody believes that the angel of light is the same thing as Satan. Nobody believes that. It's clear what the meaning is there. They're being deceptive. So there's no need to change the translation and weaken it. It just weakens it to say disguise. It's not just a disguise. He does transform himself. He does change himself, just like the worldly organizations are modifying their procedures and changing their internals, you know, doing carryings on. Everything is being changed. Maybe it's just a disguise on the outward face, but we don't know that. They could be changing. And we do know they do keep changing. You can't change your outward face without changing your inner workings also. There are transformations being carried on all the time. So it's incorrect to simply translate that as disguise, and the original Greek word means transform. So that's the better translation. Nehemiah is where we will be beginning today, and it's a very instructive reading. We have, I think, today very short readings. Now I've gone to prepare this, and there we are. Here we are. We're at the beginning of chapter 11 of Joshua. I think we better read that. We've looked at these charts, the dance of the planet Venus, the proof that the fit in the year 933 is far superior. In the BCE year 933 is far superior to the fit in 1702. You know, it's only a few points that cause that to be superior by a large margin because of the least squares fit, which magnifies the differences. But there are very noticeable differences. So we've seen the remarkable thing about these two charts, the dance of the planet Venus, both of which show the vast improvement in using the date 933 compared to 1702. So that was a remarkable thing that we learned yesterday. And the table itself in this article, the table, we better get started though, but the table here also shows these differences. You can look at through the table at these columns, the far, on the far right, the three columns, all except for the one on the furthest right, which is not the values that we're using for the Venus tablet. Okay, so they were the ones used by P.J. Huber. Mr. Huber, in his work, used different Venus tablet numbers than the ones in the second last column from the right, which are the numbers which were the better numbers that we used. And they agree better with his as well as with ours, but they agree the best with our numbers, which were computed for the year 933. So in today's reading in chapter 11, Joshua, and you can see I did a lot of work on that back at the time I wrote this article, as I did with everything I did, and I'm still going to be trying to get back into doing more research. And we know that Jesus said the truth will set you free. The truth is not something that constrains you. It's not something that makes you conform. It's not something that teaches you have to do everything the same as every other person. That's not what the truth is. The scripture for chapter 11, which is entitled Joshua, Warrior for Israel, is from James 1 and 4, which says, "Let endurance have its work complete, that you may be complete and sound in all respects, not lacking in anything. Not lacking in everything is also true. In other words, if we're not lacking in anything, then we're not lacking in everything, in having everything. We will have everything. That's important, isn't it? That's insightful. I never thought of translating it that way, but that's true. Not lacking in anything means also not lacking in having everything. We have been illuminated. We've been illuminated. We've been enlightened. Illuminated, we're talking about the light, right? The light, the angel of light, right? Not the same as, like, the devil can keep transforming himself towards the angel of light, like an apostate. Apostate might want to learn, but they just don't like the people who are teaching them. So an apostate might go away for whatever reason, but still wants to learn. So an apostate might learn continually. As soon as they're given more information, they might transform themselves. So just like Satan transforms himself, an apostate might transform himself or herself, continue to be benefiting from the illumination, and they might be approaching the angel of light. They might approach the angel of light, but not near to the angel of light. But they approach gradually the angel of light. So Satan keeps transforming himself towards being an angel of light, but he's not anything close to that. And you know how the saying goes, the enemy of the best is the good, right? We have illuminated already at some length in writing concerning Pharaoh Hatshepsut. You can check that out in chapter 5 about how friendly is the crucible of our creed to the artifacts found at Jericho and Hazor, Moses having died in 1452 BCE. In our chronology, to the great leader of Israel who succeeded Moses, it seems only a matter of justice to reiterate such matters, facts. The scarab and seal of Pharaoh Thutmose III, discovered in burial remains at Jericho, are certainly in harmony with a 1452 BCE dating of the destruction of the city of Jericho. Now, conclusions are based upon evidence rather than a lack thereof. And yet the gap in time from this scarab and seal of Pharaoh Thutmose III to the next oldest Egyptian object found in these graves at Jericho, which is a scarab, one of Pharaoh Amenhotep III, is consistent with the uninhabited state of the city of Jericho from 1452 BCE until Eglon, king of Moab, came to live there, as already mentioned in chapter 5, and coinciding with the time of rule of Pharaoh Amenhotep III. It seems remarkable, therefore, that Joshua, the warrior of Israel, who led the Israelites into the promised land, was of the time of Pharaoh Thutmose III, during whose reign an invasion first is begun into Palestine by Joshua's Israel. The end of the reign of Thutmose III is 1439 BCE in the genealogy, in our chronology, 1439, which is after the invasion by Joshua in 1452. The Bible tells us that he was the son of Nun, although he's called Hoshea at Numbers 13 and 8, and Jehoshua at Numbers 13 and 16, whence we have, quote, Joshua son of Nun, end quote, at Exodus 33 and 11. We may now confidently place the birth of Joshua, based on the date of his death, at 110 years of age, 28 years after he began to lead Israel. Well, we now know, in our later article, we said 30 years, so it's different by 2 years. He died about 1422 BCE. Here it says 1424. But we could say it's still close to being the same number. And therefore, his birth is 1530. If he died in 1422. Okay, what did we say here? 28 years. 1424. Well, he lived for 110 years, so we just add 110 to the number 1424 to get 1534. But now we say 1532 or 1533 for his birth. It's very similar to this number. Born in 1534 BCE, Joshua was about 43 years old, or nearly the same age as Caleb, who was 45 years old, at the spying out of the land. Now we would put it, he could have been 41 years old, you know, but 43 could. Now Caleb, we know, was 45 because we know more accurately how old he was. Numbers 13 and 2 and Joshua 14 and 10. And the spying out of the land in 1491 BCE. The birth of Joshua, and that number 1491 for the spying out of the land, that is the same number we have now. That hasn't changed. The birth of Joshua in 1534 BCE, now we're saying maybe 1533 or 1532, is very nearly the exact year that Moses left Egypt to go to Midian, still nearly, very nearly still, which was also during the reign of Pharaoh Amos I, as we have dated it, is during the reign of Amos from 1552 or 1551 to 1526 or so for Amenhotep, his successor. Now, that was Amenhotep I. Now, therefore, 1533 falls before the end of the reign of Amos, who reigned from 1551 to 1526, something like that, 25 years, is the number given in Manetho for the reign of Amos, right here. Amosis, 25 years, right? Okay. And Amenhotep, well, we're not concerned about that right now. Continuing on here, with Amenhotep II reigning from 1440, this is Amenhotep II, almost 100 years later, from 1440 to 1414 BCE, and we've revised it to 1439 to 1413 now. I think that's true, is it? Let me think. 14 or 1415 maybe. 1439 to 1415. No. Let me think. 14. Well, it's very similar anyway. Very similar. We know that the reign of, okay, if 9 years was Thutmose, then it would be 1414. We haven't changed it. Yeah, that's, that number hasn't changed from 1405, the beginning of Amenhotep III, back to the beginning of Thutmose 9 years earlier, is 1414. So that 1414 has not changed essentially at all. 25 years, 10 months. And we now believe, well, Amenhotep II, he either began to reign in 1442 or 1439, according to some scholars. So, I mean, and we see a very good alignment with 1439. I think we had no problem because that's the death of Thutmose III, his predecessor. So 1439 to 1414 is very close to being right. 1440, 1414, it's fine. That's what we were dating it as in the crucible here. 25 years and 10 months. Evidently, he was called Mephremuthosis by Josephus in Mr. Fotheringham's book. He's the one we wanted to look at. Mephremuthosis, 25 years, 10 months in by Josephus, or Misphragmuthosis, he's also called, 26 years by Africanus and Eusebius, but Josephus gave him 25 years, 10 months, right there. Right, 9 years and 8 months, okay, for Thutmose the IV was what Josephus said in the same work. Didn't look at that. Let's look at it while we're at it. That one, 9 years, 8 months by Josephus, right there. Right. For Thutmosis, given the name Thutmosis there by Josephus. Okay. So Joshua was living in the time of the beginning of the new kingdom of Egypt, the 18th dynasty of Egypt, when these Egyptian pharaohs ruled. During Joshua's time, Amos the First ruled, because he was still ruling when Joshua was born, or when the birth of Joshua occurred, and Amenhotep I was his successor, then Thutmose I, then Thutmose II, Hatshepsut, Thutmose III, and Amenhotep II, who was still ruling while Joshua was still living up until about 1422. BCE, 30 years after the crossing of the Jordan in 1452. So 1439 to 1414 for Amenhotep II, he was ruling and Joshua was still living. at that time. He ruled until after the death of Joshua. So all these pharaohs ruled during Joshua's lifetime. The book of Nehemiah, chapter 1, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now it came about in the month Kislev, in the 20th year, that I myself happened to be in Shushan the castle. It's interesting, he says the 20th year. He doesn't say the 20th year of the king, which is significant because it's the month Kislev. So he's talking about the Jewish secular year, which begins, in this case, it was the year in which the first year of the king occurred, of the 20th year, I should say. It's the year in which the first month of the 20th year of the king occurred. This year that began in Tishri of this year, and Kislev is a month later than Tishri in that same year. So it's before the next springtime when the king's 20th year would begin. That's why it's written this way, because it otherwise looks like it's out of order chronologically, but it's not, because he doesn't say the 20th year of the king. And we'll see in chapter 2 what we read. Then Hanani, one of my brothers, came in, he and other men from Judah, and I proceeded to ask them about the Jews, those who had escaped, who had been left over of the captivity, and also about Jerusalem. Accordingly, they said to me, those left over who have been left over from the captivity there in the jurisdictional district are in a very bad plight and in reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its very gates have been burned with fire. And it came about that as soon as I heard these words, I sat down and began to weep and mourn for days, and I was continually fasting and praying before the God of the heavens. And I went on to say, Ah, Jehovah, the God of the heavens, the God great and fear-inspiring, keeping the covenant and loving kindness toward those loving him and keeping his commandments. Toward those loving him and keeping his commandments. Jehovah keeps the covenant and the loving kindness. Please, let your ear become attentive and your eyes open to listen to the prayer of your servant, which I am praying before you today, day and night, concerning the sons of Israel, your servants, all the while making confession. Concerning the sins of the sons of Israel, with which we have sinned against you, we have sinned, both I and the house of my father. We have unquestionably acted corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments and the regulations and the judicial decisions that you gave in command to Moses, your servant. Remember, please, the word that you commanded Moses, your servant, saying, should you, for your part, act unfaithfully, I, for my part, shall scatter you among the peoples. When you will have returned to me and kept my commandments and done them, though your dispersed people should happen to be at the end of the heavens, from there I shall collect them and certainly bring them to the place that I have chosen to have my name reside there. And they are your servants and your people, whom you redeemed, Nehemiah goes on to say, by your great power and by your strong hand. Ah, Yahweh, please let your ear become attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who take delight in fearing your name, and please do grant success to your servant today and make him an object of pity before this man. Now I myself happen to be cupbearer to the king. So he prayed all this time up until the next chapter, which is concerning his approach to the king about this matter. So we should be happy. The law of Moses commanded also that we rejoice in every undertaking of ours, that we always be rejoicing. We can't let anyone rob us of our joy, no matter what. So we can't allow people, and also we know Jesus said the truth will set you free. We know we have freedom. No, we should not let anyone tell us what to do, unless we're very young children. We are free people, and we don't let other people decide for us. And we don't conform to the rules of other people. That's a very important thing. That's the only way to maintain happiness. The only way to be happy as a free people, as people who are naturally born to be free. We're born to be free when we have the truth. And because of that, we are, it's Malachi chapter 1 now, we are bound to not be enslaved by others. We are, but that takes hard work, mind you. You know how it says, the one working with a slack hand will come to be for forced labor, right? So if you don't want to work at all, if you don't work, you'll end up being forced to work. So we don't want to be like those people who become enslaved by others. Malachi, a pronouncement. The word of Jehovah concerning Israel by means of Malachi. I have loved you people, Jehovah has said, and you have said, in what way have you loved us? Was not Esau, the answer is, the brother of Jacob is the utterance of Jehovah? But I love Jacob, and Esau I have hated. And Esau was the firstborn, Jacob was the supplanter who grasped the heel of Esau. As Jacob was being born, Esau had been born already, but Jacob grasped his heel as he was coming out of the womb. Let's look at that. In Genesis 26 and 26, after that his brother came out and his hand was holding onto the heel of Esau, so he called his name Jacob. Jacob was a supplanter. He usurped and took over, grabbed onto and took over the firstborn rights of Esau and became the one to replace Esau as the firstborn. And so Jehovah says, but I love Jacob, and Esau I have hated, and I finally made his mountains a desolated waste and his inheritance for the jackals of the wilderness. Esau lived in the land of Edom. Because Edom keeps saying in verse 4, we have been shattered, but we shall return and build the devastated places. This is what Yahweh of armies has said. They for their part will build, but I for my part shall tear down. And people will certainly call them, quote, the territory of wickedness, quote, I should say, end quote, and, quote, the people whom Jehovah has denounced to time indefinite, end quote. Wow, and your own eyes will see it, and you yourselves will say, quote, may Jehovah be magnified over the territory of Israel, end quote. Israel was another name for Jacob, of course. A son, for his part, honors a father and a servant his grandmaster. So if I am a father, where's the honor to me? And if I am a grandmaster, where's the fear of me? Yahweh of armies has said to you, O priests who are despising my name. And you have said, in what way have we despised your name? The answer is, by presenting upon my altar polluted bread. And you have said, in what way have we polluted you? The answer is, by your saying, the table of Yahweh is something to be despised. And when you present a blind animal for sacrificing, it is nothing bad. And when you present a lame animal or a sick one, it is nothing bad. Bring it near, please, to your governor. Will he find pleasure in you, or will he receive you kindly? Jehovah of armies has said. And now, please soften the face of God, that he may show us favor. From your hand this has occurred. Will he receive any of you men kindly? Yahweh of armies has said. Who also is there among you that will shut the doors, and you men will not light my altar for nothing? No delight do I have in you, Jehovah of armies has said, and in the gift offering from your hand I take no pleasure, for from the sun's rising even to its setting my name will be great among the nations, and in every place sacrificial smoke will be made, a presentation will be made to my name, even a clean gift, because my name will be great among the nations, Jehovah of armies has said. Sacrificial smoke is not talking about, you know, substance abuse and the use of smoke for that purpose. It's not what it's talking about. It's talking about the holy offerings to God, which we don't render anymore. But you men are profaning me by your saying. So this is figurative. Figuratively now we render sacrifices. But you men are profaning me by your saying the table of Yahweh is something polluted, and its fruit is something to be despised, its food. And you have said, look, what a weariness, and you have caused a sniffing at it, Jehovah of armies has said, and you have brought something torn away. And the lame one and the sick one, yes, you have brought it as a gift. Can I take pleasure in it at your hand? Jehovah has said, and cursed is the one acting cunningly when there exists in his drove a male animal, and he is making a vow and sacrificing a ruined one to Jehovah. For I am a great king, Jehovah of armies has said, and my name will be fear-inspiring among the nations. It's the end of the reading of Malachi chapter 1. One thing that is, it also says in the Proverbs, you know, don't ask or somewhere, the former days are better than these. Let's look for that. Former days better. Ecclesiastes, it's in 7 and 10. Do not say, why has it happened that the former days proved to be better than these? We don't need to know why the former days were better than these. So that's something to keep in mind. But it's troubling to me. We've seen every new administration comes in with seemingly poorer, worse qualifications than the previous generation. And they set about changing all of the rules of the previous administration. And things get worse over time, not better. And this is common. This is a very common problem. We always talk about the younger generation being not as well educated as the previous generation, or not as well motivated, or something not as good about the current generation compared to the previous. But of course, that's according to the sin of Adam and the fall from grace. Ever since Adam and Eve, there's been a fall from grace, and things have gotten worse and worse and worse and worse, and they continue to get worse. They don't get better. And this notion, the false idea that things get better on their own, is just not true. You need creative power to make things better. To improve something, also, you have to know it very well. You can't improve something by just changing it. You have to know very well how it works in order to improve something. It's an improvement. That's why it's called improvement. You have to understand the inner workings to improve something. I mean, the idea that Satan transforms himself, this is such a powerful idea, because if we didn't have that knowledge that Satan transforms himself, we would be very easily tricked. You know, he even transforms himself in such a way as to try to touch our hearts. He even tries to get at our inner emotions in the way he transforms himself. We see it in advertising. They do that all the time in the world, in the worldly commercial world, I mean, of advertising and trying to sell products. They're continually trying to manipulate people's emotions. And that's how they're transforming themselves, right? They're right up to date with all the current new teachings of Jehovah's people, and then they try to twist it into misleading us down some path that serves their bottom line, whatever. Today's study was a pleasure. It's April 25th, 2024 of the Common Era. It's 1800 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. And this is Cassie. Saying, always be rejoicing. Bye for now.